Why pay more for a separate CoQ10 supplement? Enjoy twice the benefits with SuperBeats Heart Chews Advanced from the number one doctor, pharmacist, and cardiologist recommended beet brand for heart health support. The new SuperBeats Heart Chews Advanced by Human is now infused with CoQ10. That's essentially like getting CoQ10 for free. Our powerful blend of beetroot, grapeseed extract, and CoQ10 ingredients support nitric oxide production, healthy blood pressure, healthy CoQ10 levels, and heart-healthy energy with two tasty chews a day. Plus, SuperBeats Heart Chews Advance are plant-based, so you get heart-healthy energy without stimulants. For a limited time, get a free 30-day supply of SuperBeats Heart Chews on all bundles and 15% off your first order by going to radiobeats.com and using promo code DEAL. That's radiobeats.com, code DEAL.
What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
You know, Ben, I feel like we've fallen into a bit of a rut here where people are just sort of accepting en masse that, like, you're the one true host or something. Like, where's the shakeup, man? You know, I feel like this has been your strategy all along. Lull people into a false sense of this is how it always is. Boy, well, look, guys, it's not that hard. All you gotta do is go over to the Patreon and vote for Jazzy J, and we can have a different intro. It's as simple as that.
Is it as simple as that?
It's as simple as that.
It seemed like for a hot minute there, things had been thrown into flux.
Yeah.
And I do find comfort in the regularity of knowing what my role ultimately will be, because it really does dictate a lot of how I bring energy to the show.
Like, oh, you think
like,
so?
Oh, yeah. Like when you're host, yeah, it's like I'm a completely different person. Oof. People don't always want to see the Ken Barlin.
Ken Barlin, that's you, the host.
That's like the mirror verse me.
He's Ken Barlin.
He's way meaner.
I don't recall you being mean when on the rare occasions when I have hosted, but perhaps we can just attribute that to my tremendous hostmanship to cover up all of your rudeness.
Yeah, you're just such a true host, truly great
you
host.
You guys can't tell. Ben is fuming when I am the host.
Absolutely fuming. I honestly, though, in actuality, I feel like there's been a little while here where I have been really trying hard to like speak up more. Mm. And I feel like sometimes like I'll walk into the office and I'm like, Mean Ben's here today. And it's like, we've already talked about this before. Cause yeah, I feel like you understood completely like what was happening, which was just basically like, oh, Ben's just trying to like actually like do something here. Like he's presenting it as if it's like a gaff.
Like a yolk.
Yeah. Just like a cracked egg, mm-hmm, right in the middle of the room. But instead it was actually like, I feel like I almost need to like let people know. It's like, hey guys, this is like, you know, like I'm going to be a persona today. I'm going to be Ken Barlin today. Yeah. And part of that means that I'm going to be like way, way more vocal about things.
Like I'm kind of joking, but yeah, I'm not.
Like at the same time, I'm getting a lot of stuff off my chest and I feel a lot better about it. So,
Well, you know, as regular as you like things, of course, we all know that on this side of the set, we enjoy a bit of chaos from time to time.
Yeah, well, I know much. I feel like though, with time, I've come to learn that you more than I would have expected. Mm. Like some chaos, well, like to mix it up a little
bit. Maybe more than I would have expected.
Yeah,
you know? I'm starting to recognize it more and more as like a, it's not that I want things to be crazy. I just enjoy watching the unknown of it all.
Yes. I wonder if this is like the new midlife crisis for millennials, which is just quite literally, turns out we kind of quietly love a little bit of like neutral chaos.
A little bit of neutral chaos out there.
We don't want anybody to be like, you know, negatively impacted.
I don't want anyone to get hurt.
But like if we can cause a stir, some confusion.
Exactly. You gotta mix it up, man. Throw people out of their ruts, get them thinking differently.
Oh, now that's interesting. I mean, if anything, it seems like you're kind of contributing to like some positive and critical thinking in that capacity.
Exactly.
You're really just trying to get people going, motivated, mentally thinking.
My favorite part about the GMA sticker game we did in high school was one day where I felt like there was this one other, there was another guy in our grade who I felt like we were never like quite eye to eye or something. Like we sort of like had similar groups of friends, but I felt like me and him were never like buddy buddy or anything.
Ooh, okay. Yeah.
Sort of like, yeah,
rivals.
Not what you want to say rivals. It's just like we,
rivals.
Like every now and then, like I'd end up, you know, we'd end up like near each other in class and like in the exact way that sometimes you sit next to someone in class to become friends, we didn't.
So,
you know?
So what I'm hearing is that like you guys would maybe compare outcomes of one another and try to a degree of one-upsmanship, so to speak, and
perhaps his failures were your successes. But not like openly towards one another or anything.
Yeah.
It's just like I felt like I personally might have felt that way. And I feel like he might have personally felt that way. But at no point would it have ever been like, oh yeah, we are like you know.
Okay.
The game of one-upsmanship was won entirely by me and unbeknownst to him because one day
I didn't even know we were playing.
Exactly. Exactly. One day he was wearing the GMA sticker on his arm as if he had any idea what it meant at all.
Incredible.
And yeah, and I remember like him asking, like, do you guys know what's up with the ducks? And I was just like, no idea, man. What did you know? They're everywhere.
Anyway, oh man, that's such good times.
That was good times for me.
Yeah, I would imagine so. That is really like the plan executing itself to the fullest.
Is
sort of like somebody else embracing it while and they have no idea why.
Right. Yeah. Like it's just like a part it's, of it. It's curious to see how it could like it like you know, it infected the population in a way that like some people are sporting it as if they have any idea when they don't because there is no idea
because there is no. This is like the Illuminati. I feel like. It's literally just a group of people that are like starting positions or like social perspectives or whatever. And it's like, let's just see if we can make this a thing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like,
if you can
offer enough of a compelling argument behind anything and somebody has the ability, like I've noticed this to be true, like very frequently, like somebody like will say something and it'll feel like kind of drawing. You're like, is that a thing? And it's like, yeah, because of this and this and this and this. And it's like, well, just because there's an answer doesn't necessarily give it like strength of argument.
Indeed.
Like, I can appreciate the fact that there is some argument.
Right.
But that doesn't mean necessarily that like it's a good enough argument like to sweep or declare. So interestingly, I was finding we have like a something to talk about here today on the pop in our show notes. And I found in the process of like researching for this particular topic, I was stumbling across a couple of different things. And the topic itself is basically like fad or future. And so it would be like throughout history, the number of different times that like a new thing was presented to the world. And they could be things that now today have become so commonplace that you may never have even considered the moment where it wasn't.
The
one that I stumbled across that I found absolutely like no way, I can't believe this was ever not a thing. And the way that it was not a thing is so relatable to the present in this exact same way. And that was the invention of the cheeseburger.
Like people didn't accept cheese on burgers?
People did not accept cheese on burgers because they thought like the combination of beef and dairy was like apprehensible.
Repugnant. You know?
Yes, repugnant indeed. Yeah. And it was something that was like literally considered to be like a Californian thing, you know?
Oh.
And I was like, oh, that's so interesting because I feel like there's the pineapples on pizza or even like in the movie, like Inside Out, like they moved to San Francisco, you know, which is like known for being like kind of hip and trendy and like, you know, up on the times and stuff. And they've got like the broccoli pizza or whatever. And it's like, it's presented as this like, who would want broccoli on pizza? You know, or like a turkey burger with like avocado and stuff on it.
Like if you order a California burger, at least in Virginia, what it means typically is a turkey burger patty with avocado And it's normally some sort of like chipotle sauce and like bacon.
Yeah.
There's a specific combination for what constitutes a California burger.
Maybe like a corn chutney.
A corn chutney would be great on a California burger.
Kind of acidic.
You got to put your own spin on it for restaurant to restaurant.
Of course. Yeah. Gotta leave your mark on the turkey burger.
Yeah.
but no, what I think is interesting about it though, is that like, I do think that this ends up happening like where even, like in our lifetime, I used avocados as an example already, but I feel like avocados like just hit a vogue, you know, it's like, they just like, I don't know if like big avocado just like figured it out or like something changed. I feel like people have said this before about Brussels sprouts, which is another one that I feel like became very popular, but like people have said that like they like somewhere along the way, they like fixed Brussels sprouts so that they stopped tasting like kind of bitter or something.
Like it was, because if you have Brussels sprouts now, they're like very popular. And like, I remember growing up, this is similar to like, this is what I thought the Limburger cheese must have been like.
Growing up,
everyone made fun of Brussels sprouts as this like thing you didn't like. And then I grew up and tried Brussels sprouts and they were good. And it was like, why was everyone making fun of Brussels sprouts? But then, articles came out and they're like, no, you're not remembering wrong. They just used to taste worse.
Okay, yeah.
Kind of thing.
But that being said, broccoli was the other one of these. Like, I feel like we grew up in such a broccoli household.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, it was always the thing that was, like, introduced as, like the go-to, like, disgusting food.
You referenced Inside Out as broccoli on pizza.
Right, exactly. Yeah, right. And it's like, you know, we made broccoli last night for dinner and it was easily Addie's favorite part of the meal.
Yeah.
You know, like, we weren't having to like force her. Like, we were having a hard time getting her to eat her cheese quesadillas, but the broccoli, she like mowed those like that down.
Right, yeah.
Like, if anything, we could have given her more had we had more. And so similarly, growing up, Mom, I felt like, made broccoli like 3 nights a week at least. And so I even feel like I remember the doctor being like, you eating all your greens? And it was like, why wouldn't I eat my greens?
Of course, yeah. Like, but I also do remember the constant like anti-broccoli propaganda that seemed to be present in all child's programming or something.
Classic Illuminati.
Classic. Yeah, you know, just like, let's just see what happens if we tell them broccoli's bad. What could go wrong?
make it a punchline.
Maybe if we hang one vegetable out to dry, it'll make them feel like all the other vegetables are cool.
That's it.
Like, just really alienate one vegetable. That way they'll have to focus on that one and they'll be like, yeah, I don't eat broccoli. Everything else, carrots, potatoes, radishes, lettuce, amazing. Keep the broccoli away. And it's like, haha, tricked you. I wanted you to eat all those other things.
Yeah. Good one indeed.
Right. Yes.
Indeed.
Classic.
So anyway, I feel like the reason that we had, and I feel like I jumped literally to the bottom of my list thinking that my cheeseburgers were going to be like my big ace in the hole for that particular conversation. But I know that like the topic of AI feels like it's literally mounting by the day.
Oh,
like,
by the day, by the second, it seems.
Yes. Like I feel like since possibly we talked about this a little bit in office, but I feel like possibly since the invention of the iPhone, it's like, I don't know if we've ever seen a piece of technology be introduced and like so widely accepted so quickly. However, I think the big question is like fad or future. In the answer, I would say like before even like letting you speak is probably some version of both. Like when it comes down to like what the ultimate like long-term execution of this new technology will be.
Right.
But there's no doubt about it that very rapidly it has gone from something sort of like kind of playful, whimsical, interesting to something that is like incredibly robust. Just like that.
Yes.
And I mean, even, you know, for people like us, you know, like we have never really been like, you know, like able to draw very well ourselves. Like I think it has helped us imagine some things, which has been kind of neat.
It has been, a very interesting tool to experiment with because, if you are personally an artist, you can make exactly what you want and stuff. But, it obviously will take you however long it takes you to, you know, work on your completed work of art. But if you can't draw or whatever, it's very interesting to have. The one we've been using is Midjourney, to have it just like, you know, put in a prompt and see what it spits out.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's like crazy. Like I think I was talking earlier this week. Like, I remember when I entered the workforce in like 2010, it was sort of around the time that lots of companies were creating the position of like a social media manager, like realizing that was an important thing they needed like a full-time person to be on top of.
Yes, but interestingly about the social media manager position is that I feel like this was something that I even remember Dad, he had taken like a brief period of time where he like stepped away from like the news desk and was going to like start doing like his own like PR agency. And I think he was like as ever with Dad, I feel like he was kind of like an early adopter of the concept of managing a company's social media website. So this was like a service he was offering super early on. And I think that like with that, it was kind of like everybody kind of knew like we need to be doing the social media game. We don't really know how, but surely there should be someone whose sole job it is to just like work that strategy.
Yeah.
And you know, I feel like in the early days, it was probably the type of thing where this was like a very entry-level position for probably like a recent college graduate, like not for like a high-level like marketing executive. This was almost like something that needed to be like built from the ground up.
It was probably an interesting thing to adapt, because if I had to guess, like if you're like a big company and you have like a marketing arm, like do you want to trust some 20-year-old out of college to manage like your very public facing brand messaging on Facebook and Twitter? Or would you feel more comfortable with like a really established ad agency or something? But if that ad agency just has a bunch of like more veteran marketers who are unaccustomed to social media, like are they actually going to be the best option?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. And probably like, you know, prior to time before it. And I mean, of course, you know, like I wasn't there through all the technological advancements of the century prior to the existing one, but like it may have been the case that in most situations, just pure experience, pure seniority, pure time spent like in the field always yielded probably like a much, much, much more qualified person. And this was a strange circumstance where it was almost like the reason that social media was so popular was due to these people who were like brand new to the workforce. And it's possible at that point in time, it wasn't even fully adopted by the veterans in the marketing agency itself. Right,
exactly.
Yeah.
So anyway, all that to say, it would not surprise me if we are on the cusp, and this could already be happening and I'm just unaware of it, where like I can imagine companies creating positions where it is just like you are the AI coordinator, like the person who they like let generate, like the person who knows how best to talk to the AI to get it to generate the things you want.
Yes.
You know, like to like understand the full capabilities beyond like draw me a picture of this.
Yes.
You know.
Right. And I do think that there's certainly, and if you've never used Midjourney before, it's sort of a strange experience because the way that it's baked into a Discord server effectively. So if you join the Midjourney Discord server, then you can go into one of the many channels, and literally whilst you're in one of those channels, you can actively see all of the other people who are actively making requests for specific kinds of artwork.
Yeah.
And like as sort of like a like an entry level person, you might walk in there and just be having fun with it and want to ask it to like create something silly, like, you know, Dobby wearing a Christmas hat.
It's so funny. The longer I've been using Midjourney, the more you can like tell the kind of person or like that is operating, that is asking for requests.
Yes.
Like very off the wall, just silly sounding things. You can like almost immediately identify as like this person just got on here and is like testing out the capabilities and is just seeing what'll happen if it types in something random.
Right.
Yes. Whereas like sometimes I'll see someone put in like a wall of text of like hyper specific things that they want out of it. And those are interesting because sometimes they're different results. Like sometimes they get like, it looks like they get exactly what they want. Whereas sometimes it looks like the way they've talked to it, it's like they put in too many like left turns here and there and they asked for too many things and now it's lost its way.
Yes.
Kind of thing. But
or interestingly, the thing that I've noticed is that like I've gone in there and like spent some time goofing around or whatever. And you'll see the same person who for hours has been working on perfecting essentially the same image that has been created.
Right.
And that's like a very, in and of itself, like, you know, it's its own bizarre form of like art or skill or something, you know, because like, this is clearly someone who like, when I go in and I'm like, you know, like again, like imagine Dobby in a Santa hat or something like that. Like I'm just like, that's sort of like the prompt that I'll give it. And it's like, what does it come up with? Oh yeah. It looks like Dobby and he's wearing a Santa hat. That's cool. you know, and it's sort of like I'm sort of fine with it right there. I'm done, you know, but then you might see somebody who's like trying to, create like a storefront, for example, and they're literally like a retail storefront, and they're like literally going through and hundreds and hundreds of iterations, making like minute changes.
Yeah.
And you're kind of like I'm looking at them and I'm like, what type of vision is in your mind that you have been working on this same image that I can barely even notice the subtle differences for hours?
Right. Like you're looking for something very specific. And it's like, at some point, why aren't you just like bringing it into Photoshop and doing it yourself
something? Yeah.
Or was there like some takeaway? But you're right. There are definitely times where you can tell someone is like really zeroing in on it, what's also interesting to me about it is that you can see just the fact that you can see what everyone else is working on. It's like this weirdly like inspirational zone where I might be used to working on something and suddenly someone will ask for a completely different style of art for something way different that they're working on. And all of a sudden it'll be like, ooh, that I don't have a need for this right now, but that style of whatever they just did looks like really cool. Yes. So I've literally got like a document going where I would just go and like copy and paste their prompt and just like save different prompts. As like, okay, well, if in the future I need to create like a cool cutesy white sticker, now I know exactly how to phrase it to give it exactly what I want.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. That's so very, it's like, interesting. Yeah. So, and I've gone back and used some of them a few times and it's like, man, there it is. Boom. That's cool. That's very much what I want. That's a very cool image.
Right. Right. Yeah. So like in its like own way, it's like, I wonder if you're like writing like a really, subjective, like kind of formula compared to a formula for like typing code for a website, for example, like typing like HTML or even like a math formula. You know, it's like those are things that mean exactly what they mean and the outcome is exactly what you've asked it to be.
Right.
And probably anybody who codes is like, under best case scenario, that's how it works. but you know, this is such a strange one because it like, because you're applying it then to like a visual medium, it's kind of like, it's like you can almost like put together successfully and useful like pieces of code. And I almost wonder if like at any point in time people would have like the ability to sell their specific prompt. Like, do you know what I mean?
Like a prompt portfolio or something, or like a prompt catalog or something.
Exactly.
That's very interesting.
Right. Mm. It's like, so basically what somebody has come up with is they've finagled the information so much that they could then give you the ability to like insert like your company name here and it would like immediately fill it out, mm-hmm. you know, so yeah, perfectly or whatever.
That's interesting. I can totally see stuff like that becoming a product of the future. I'll say the one thing, speaking of like insert company name here, it seems like one thing that the bots are not good at least the art bots, are like words.
Yes. Yeah. They seem absolutely awful at that. They are not able to translate it in any way, shape or form.
Yeah. It's just like, here are letter shaped symbols on a sign.
Right.
Right. These look, they're right. And it's like weird because it's like, they do have the vague appearance of letters, but clearly aren't anything.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So the big question though, is that like, because this is happening so fast and like with this like AI art style sort of like having its own, like it's hard to know or put your finger on exactly like what is going to make it so identifiable in the future, or like what will eventually like you'll be able to tell, be like, you'll be able to look at an image and be like, no, that's AI. Like,
right. Like, will, or like, to me, that's an interesting question. Like, sometimes I feel like that topic of conversation has come up in the office a few times. Like, right now, it looks like so flashy and cool and different and like polished. But in a year from now, will we all be very used to it and very clearly be able to identify, like, this one's AI?
Right.
And like, certainly right now, there are like little tells a lot of time you can go to. Like, I know like pupils and eyes aren't always like perfect circles is like an easy one.
Okay.
Or hands is one that it has trouble with,
which is interesting, a lot of times, because I think in actual art, like, you know, for like hand-drawn things, drawing hands I think is like a known difficulty. It's a challenge.
What I think is really interesting about that question, that was like, one, I don't think it's going to get easier to tell. I think it's going to get harder to tell.
I think that like the art as we know it now would be highly identifiable 1 year from now.
Oh, right,
as like, exactly what it is.
Oh, right, yeah. But here's the other thing. here's the other thing that has occurred to me is that you will never know how many things you didn't realize were AI.
Yeah, that's right? An interesting question.
Right? Like you think you can tell. It's like, yeah, you can tell when you can tell. But how many times have you looked at something and already not known?
Right.
You know, like how many advertisements have you seen online where it's like, oh, that was just like a model wearing red lipstick. And it's like, that person doesn't exist. They were generated by a computer, you know?
right.
It's like how that to me is the crazy part. Like, it's like, you'll always like, you'll know when you know, but you'll never know how often you don't know.
Right. Yes. No, it's true. I mean, but like similarly, it's kind of fascinating because like there's a lot of tricks to the trade when it comes to like product photography for marketing various like food things as well. Like,
yeah.
You know, I think if you're making like a stack of pancakes for like an IHOP commercial, for example, it's very common to like, you know, insert like a sleeve of cardboard in between each pancake to make it like...
This is a great example.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, you're looking or even like whenever you ordered at like a fast food eatery and you're like looking up at the board and they show you the Whopper and it's got like a perfectly rounded sesame seed bun that like the seeds are all exactly positioned or whatever the case may be, like syrup. I know usually like actual syrup tends to not look as good in photos, so use like motor oil instead.
Right.
You know, because nobody's ever actually eating it. They're just trying to like
take a good picture of it.
Exactly.
Right.
Yep. And so it's like there's so many strange little things. We were talking to on a Patreon call last week, a photographer friend of ours,
yes,
who was making a bunch of like fake cupcakes. And what was the material that she used? It was like spray foam or something like that. You know,
yeah,
it was like,
yeah,
like whatever it was. But then what you could have was these like cupcakes that look absolutely perfect, but like never would go bad.
Right.
And it's like, oh, that's so interesting.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's a great example. It's like they make these cool props. They take the pictures of them. They make the burger. They put motor oil on it. They use that in the advertising. And you go and you look at it and think, man, I want that burger. And then you buy it. And you don't ever know that burger wasn't real. You know?
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or, right. or covered like, in motor oil instead
right.
of syrup.
It's
yeah.
But it's like the same principle.
Right.
It's like, this is like, yeah, yeah. You thought that was a real burger, but it wasn't. Or maybe you are a little tuned in, but it's like, I'm aware that food photography happens, but when I see but I'm not thinking about it all the time.
Exactly.
You know, if I drive past the McDonald's and see a Big Mac in there, I'm just like, boy, that looks like a good Big Mac. You know?
You know, I could stop.
It doesn't cross my mind that like, but you know, like, because I've never, of course, you never expect what you order to look like the picture, you know?
It's
true. You're trained to do that. So it's not like I stare at it and I'm like, oh yeah, but it's not going to look like that. Because I never expect it to look like the picture.
Why does that not bother us more?
Oh, it should. It should. There's actually, I don't know if you ever watched Good Mythical Morning. They have episodes about this exact thing where it's just like which fast food restaurants package their food the closest to the pictures.
Oh yeah.
It's
yeah.
They'll just like order it and open it and be like, all right, yeah, this looks not even close. You know, it's like, those are always really interesting episodes.
Right. But, well, so on that note, again, this would be like an interesting thing where like, you know, if like 100 years from now, they were to look back on advertisements that like, there was this weird era of time where we would take product for food photography and we would just make the food look unrealistically good.
Yeah.
And it would like, people would like look at it and be like, food does not look like that. Like, why does it look like that? That's so weird.
Yeah. Right.
But, like, you know, it's like, we're so used to it that it's like it would be so interesting if that became like a law that was passed or something. It's like in food photography, you cannot create like falsified versions of food expectations or something like that. Like, doesn't that already just sound like verbiage,
right?
That like you could hear.
That sounds right.
So like at some point in time, people would look back on these things and the thing that would mark it as being from this era is like, it's too perfect. That's weird. Like that. This is not what it looks like.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is that to me is also like the only thing that could maybe like prevent that would make like the AI stuff be a fad rather than the future, is that if some law gets passed, it's like, no, this is just, we're all just, you know what? We had some fun. We're shutting this down now. We're not doing that as a species. We're not opening that door.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, I know. I mean, yeah. There's absolutely no doubt that I feel like the film Terminator has got to be having like a total resurgence of popularity.
Terminator,
at the moment.
iRobot. Yeah.
Yeah. Just
her.
Just anything. To
Ex
do
Machina, all of these things, yeah.
Right? Anything where artificial intelligence is learning, people are like, All right, maybe we should go back and revisit these cautionary tales. Like, what can happen here? Because we're smart enough to imagine it, but like, now we were smart enough to do it.
Yeah. What if the machines are smart enough to watch the movie and they get ideas? Yeah, like, that's...
Oh, man.
Yeah.
The idea of a machine wanting to watch human-made entertainment is in and of itself an interesting...
That's weird. Yeah. That's the thing. It's like, could that happen... You know, because like whenever you think about, like, I feel like this is always the problem with trying to imagine the future is that you put the limitations of today on the future and you're like, incorrect. Those won't be a problem because the future, right? Like self-driving cars or something, it'll be like, oh, like I remember having a conversation with someone once about whether or not they would like that. You can never get to the point where you don't have to like sit at a steering wheel because like, you know, cars will never know that you should hit a deer rather than trying to brake for it or something.
Oh, sure.
You know,
sure.
Something like some kind of thing like that. And it's like, right, like right now they don't know that. Right. You know,
yes.
like you're letting this like a stipulation like that hinder the full understand like what it like they're more capable like in a world where self-driving cars exist, they are more than capable of handling situations like that.
Right. Like something has been either done. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it could even be something that we can't concoct
right
out of our heads right now because so much would need to change for it to take place. But I mean, honestly, on my list of like fatter future is also just the automobile because, you know, when vehicles were first invented, you know, like in the late 1800s, early 1900s, they were absolutely seen as something that like would be owned by only the rich and wealthy, and that there would never really be like a practical way to implement them, you know, like widespread to where like every household family might be able to like have one of their mm-hmm. own, you know, and like what the production would end up looking like, and the you know, all of these like little things.
Yeah.
You know, and yet it's like, you know, so if you were to have existed in that day and age and to have seen nothing but like, you know, the richest and wealthiest being able to drive around in their, you know, motorized vehicles rather than horse-drawn carriages, you know, you probably would have been like, that's not the future, just a bunch of showboaters over there.
Right.
You know, and then sure enough, fast forward a full century and it's like, oh, okay, yeah, we built massive roads. Like, it was really funny because when we were driving to Washington, D.C. last week, I kept referring to the map, like on Google Maps, like as we were like driving to the city, I was like, there's a lot of noodles around this one. And it would be like, you'd be driving on like one of these like interchanges on the highway. And like on Google Maps, it's literally just like a network of intercrossing lines.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, we built a bunch of roads.
Yeah.
Because it was like, okay, well, we need ways to like navigate this way, that way, this way, that way, this way, that way, like, you know,
right,
all the time. And it, you know, it's like probably to have ever imagined that noodle of roads 100 years ago would have seemed like impossible.
Would have seemed like impossible.
There's no way that will ever happen.
Oh my gosh. Nothing. Yeah. Like, I always wonder whenever we drive like toward like DC in particular, like, it always occurs to me, or whenever you're getting like near a big city or something, all of a sudden, yeah, like the outskirts of it will be surrounded, yeah, by, you're right, like nude, like spaghetti looking kinds of exits and off ramps and like off ramps that have second off ramps, like, oh, you know,
those are,
yeah, it's like, oh, stay in the left two lanes to get off on this exit, then veer right and turn left at the light. And you're like, wait, what?
Right,
like,
right.
Go left, but stay right, then turn left. Okay. All right.
Dude, I missed it. I missed the turn on our way to DC because I missed an exit on an exit ramp.
Yeah.
And it was right. Like, what?
Yeah.
That can't be an exit on an exit ramp.
It just makes it like baffles me that people used to drive around, like, could navigate the roads without the GPS at some point, you know?
Yes.
I'm
okay.
Like, are roads this way now because like people are like, no, don't even worry about making the roads confusing and wackadoodle because like the GPS will just tell you where to go. Or like at some point where they're like, no, roads need to be really obvious because people aren't going to know how they connect. Like, you know,
this is the deer problem because I think you're right. I think that it's kind of like prior and I'm sure that there was like overlap where roads were becoming more complicated at a rate that was kind of like careening towards the advent of like, you know, Google Maps or map-based GPS technology or whatever, yeah. like the Garmin devices and such. But I have to imagine that at one point in time, the knowledge that would have been required to successfully do this without the app would have been like it's hard with the app. It's hard when the app is telling you at the moment to turn.
I know. I'm like, whenever I go to these cities, I'm like, are there people who live here who are just like, oh yeah, I need to get to this section. Hold on, let me go. All right, I got it. And then you just like map it out in their brain.
Well, I think it's entirely possible. I know like one of the fun facts, and I think I've brought it up on the pod before, so apologies if you're hearing me rant again. But I know that like the process of becoming a taxi cab driver in London is apparently like a really, really, really difficult thing to accomplish, because in order to be approved to drive one of the cabs there, you have to be able to successfully like have a mental map of all of the roads of London.
It's impressive.
And I think that it's like the hippocampus or something like that, but some part of the brain through brain scans, like they've literally been able to look at cab drivers in London, and like this part of their brain is just literally bigger because they have like built, so it's like they've worked that muscle so hard that it is literally stronger than other people.
That's
impressive. Yeah, which
it
makes
sense. It does make sense, but like you're at, and if you're, that's your job, then that like that makes sense. But like on, I think like on average, you know, whatever road you take to work and get home is probably the ones you're traveling the most. And like when I think about it, like if I need to get anywhere in Roanoke, like we've lived here for over 30 years. So it's like, yeah, I can do it. I know everywhere.
Yes.
I can at least get within, you know, a block of you.
And
you
I would even say though for Roanoke, because we live in a town that's mountainous and has lots of hills and like diversions that would have caused roads to have not been built like in a grid.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when I was working with the guys out of Florida for some aquarium stuff back in the day, like I think I said a couple weeks ago last week on the pop, they were living in Roanoke for like months at a time while we were doing this entire thing. And I remember them talking to me about, they're like, our entire road system is a grid. It's all squares, rectangles.
Yeah,
like,
which, you know, makes sense.
It makes plenty of sense. Yeah. But like here, it's not like that. So you have like triangles and turns and twists and summits and peaks and, you know.
I mean, there is all that stuff, but also it's mostly like 581 intersects with Electric, intersects with Brambleton. And that'll get you basically the whole city.
Yes. Big perpendicular lines do good for road-based travel.
Right. There's still like four or five main roads that are there, and that basically gets, and it's like I go to other places though and I'm like, does Roanoke seem this complicated to other people, or do I just, am I just familiar with it more? And it's like probably a little bit of both is true, but I don't think Roanoke has the same, it certainly doesn't have the complicated spaghetti noodle
setup
that DC has.
We have a handful of four leaf clovers.
Yeah,
not to brag. We have the clovers.
They're building roundabouts all over the place. Let me tell you.
Yeah. No, we're super advanced. That being said, okay. So here was another piece of technology that I felt like was very, very. This was a fad, I think, in the early 1900s, but it was fully lit movie theaters.
Gross.
I know. Doesn't
Why?
It's like what a strange idea.
It is. It is.
I think that the idea in part was due to the fact that there was like a little bit of insecurity about being in a completely dark room with a bunch of strangers, which is certainly like, as soon as you hear that, it's like, oh.
That reminds me immediately of like Uber drivers.
Oh, yes. You like know, people were like you're going to get in
you
a car
want me
with.
To just, you just want, I'm just going to get in a car with a stranger who just is on the app, and that's just. What?
Yeah. Right. Like they can find me through my phone.
Right.
And then I get into their car.
And
not
they
like,
bring me to my house.
Right. It's like you don't see the.
Right.
You don't. Yeah.
They're getting a lot more information about me.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Which certainly is a thing. But yeah. So I think that there was a couple of different like reasons for it. I think eye strain was another one that people were super concerned about. But also there was like the creation of. Like a darker screen that you'd project the film on in tandem with like a brighter projector. And so like, it was sort of like supposed to like create this whole vibe. So for like a brief period of time, this would be like fad or future type of question. This was fad, was fully lit movie theater going experiences.
Ah,
and
man, weird.
I know. Yeah. Super, sounds super terrible. Strange. Yeah. But anyway, obviously that one didn't catch on.
Okay. This one I think is interesting. What do you think about Blu-ray discs as Were they a real thing, or was it ever just the fad?
Blu-ray. Oh man, yeah. It feels like it was so brief. It was so such a short period of time.
To me, it was that like Blu-ray was clearly a superior product to DVDs.
Yes.
But they were coming out at the same time as everything was going digital. And so it was like, yeah, you could buy it, but also they're like more expensive and it's cheaper to do it this way. So they're better, but we don't really need them.
Right. Yes. No, I know what you mean. This is similarly, I would even compare it to Redbox movie rentals.
Yeah. Which it was a stopgap solution or something.
Yes. It was like, yeah. It was like a very brief, like in between of like, streaming services, which would just be available in your home and you'd have access to like the entire library of all film ever. And movie rental stores where you had to like physically drive to a location, go into a building, you know, communicate with another human being. There was like designated like return times, whatever. And then like, I remember Redbox when I was in college ended up being like a really amazing feature because there was one like nearby my apartment at like a 7-Eleven. And I would just like check on the app and be like, oh cool. They have like the new Fast Five movie or right. whatever, you know, like I'm going to go down and rent it. And then it was kind of like they charged you on the basis of however long you kept it. So if you kept it for like 7 days, they charged you $14. And if you kept it for like 2 days, it was like $4.
Right.
And yeah, it was like at the time I was like, oh my gosh, Blockbuster is so screwed. And it was, but at the same rate, I was like, I bought so hard into the idea. Like if I had the money to invest in a Redbox at that point in time, mm-hmm. I would have been like push the cash across the table type of situation. And I've been like, this is the future. And it was because like, I was like recognizing that it was a new piece of better technology than what we had been used to. And we were big, video rental store people
that we were
growing up. Like yeah. I felt like it was like a family weekly tradition. Like we were always there. The people knew us. We always got the popcorn.
Yeah.
When you walked in. It was pretty cool. Which I, you know, now even again, I think there's like some word that I think like movie rental stores are now like coming back. It's like a second coming of like nostalgia where it's like, oh, it's fun to go and like pick up a movie from a place, which I don't think will last. I feel like there's just no chance that lasts. Like, yeah. I have no idea. This is like one of those things. It's like, was this an April Fool's Day prank that I bought into? And it's like 3 months later. And I'm just now realizing that like, it wasn't actually in fact real information. I don't know. I'll have to check that for you. Are there more Blockbusters coming back?
I can see like one or two existing in like a highly populated area for the sake of nostalgia, but like as a widespread business model, I cannot imagine that, you know,
okay,
succeeding.
Yeah. No, yeah, me neither. But so the, unless it's just like, you know, like this is like one of those things, like if you live in a big city, it's like there's at least one video rental store you can.
Well, sure.
But in the same way, that's there's like an escape
room. I don't
room.
Believe there's zero video rental stores like in New York City.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Surely you can go somewhere to do it. But so, I mean, if you want to look at things like VHS, DVD, Blu-ray, or even compare it to something like a Blockbuster store versus a Redbox store versus a streaming service. It's like when it comes down to a lot of these things over the course of history, they lasted for a fairly brief stint of time.
Right.
Like they like both DVDs and Blu-ray are really just like temporary solves for the consumer's desire for higher quality like video presentation service that is now just otherwise available with the click of a remote.
Right.
You know, which is very interesting. But like, you know, if you were to think about the entire lifespan of DVDs, it's maybe like 20 years.
Sure. Like, yeah, that sounds about right.
As far as history is concerned, that's not a long time.
Yeah, it's not. And it, like, I don't, yeah, you know, sometimes like I was at Walmart this past weekend and I walked past like the electronics section and they've got like the DVD, like almost just like bins. Where it's just like a giant cardboard box full of just like just DVDs. And like, I don't know, like, are many people still using DVDs as their like main form of movie consumption? Or I don't know.
I don't like, know. It, like that. That's a, like, I mean, here's the big thing too, because you could look at like cable companies and like cable cutting and all the rest of that.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, it seems like fewer and fewer people might have cable TV, in like, you know, the name of like a streaming service or whatever. But when it comes down to it, like if all you had was just like one streaming service, that would still be fairly inexpensive. And there would still probably be more content on there than one you ever would have bought in DVDs and Blu-rays. And two, that you probably would ever just be able to watch hard stop.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So then here's the next prediction. Okay. So when everything was transitioning from like lots of cable and DVDs to like streaming.
Yes.
Like one of the real appealing things about it was that like I can cut cable and go to like Netflix and I am saving a ton of money every month.
Right.
Where like it is so much cheaper to do streaming. Whereas nowadays that it's probably like evened out to the point where like, okay, well I don't have this like really high expensive cable bill anymore, but I've got like, you know, four or five streaming services, which sort of like all together add up to about the same.
Yeah. And if one of them's YouTube TV, then that's $65 right there. So that's probably half of what a cable bill was at
sure
some time. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's like, there's that. But so then fast forward, I bet something like that happens with AI. Like,
okay, to bring it full circle.
To bring it full circle. Because, like, right now, you can go use ChatGPT. Like, it is completely free.
Yes.
There's, like, Chrome extensions. There's, like, all sorts of different things you can, like, add on to your browser that'll just, like, import, that'll use, like, you know, I see on Twitter a lot, there's, like, the algorithm on Twitter has decided that I am a target for people who are interested in, like, AI stuff, but they'll constantly be like, oh, ChatGPT is history. Check out these 10 amazing new extensions on Chrome or Bing or whatever.
Right.
And so they're out there and it's all like completely free right now. And it's like right now, like I would bet you that in like 10 years time, if not way sooner, it'll be like, oh yeah, yeah. I remember the days when I could just go on there and just do it for free. And now it's like, yeah, like, you know, X dollars a month to access this, AI functionality.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that like, you know, even if you were to go back to like, one, I would say Hulu was a really strange streaming service when it was first released because it was literally just free. And at the time, like I watched the entire show Lost, which I think is like 7 seasons, maybe of like 20 plus episodes per season.
Yeah.
So a lot of like what at the time was like premium free entertainment that I could watch completely at my leisure. And,
right.
I remember that experience being like, I'm getting away with something.
It
right
did.
Now.
Yeah. Like, I remember those early days on Hulu where it was just like, I can just, all right, cool.
Yes. And then similarly, like one of the big things, like in the film, The Social Network, we're talking about like Mark Zuckerberg and the creation of like Facebook is like, he is like adamant about Facebook not having ads for a really, really long time.
Right.
But now, you know, same thing. If you go onto Facebook, it's like, part of the reason I feel like I exited social media entirely was partially just due to the fact it's like Instagram, which is owned by Meta, which is Facebook. It's like the ads are too good. Like they just get me, you know, like, and I need to have them not get me.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, it's very interesting because it was like an integral piece of like what he knew made Facebook so cool in the beginning. And then ultimately like, completely changed the game of marketing, specifically when it comes to advertising.
Right.
You know, and it's like, it's so strange. But so my point is, though, is I think you're absolutely correct, where it's like, we're in the Wild West right now. And at the rate at which things move nowadays, it's almost like, you know, trying to get people hooked. It's like, get them to be dependent on it. And then as soon as they are, add a price tag. Because right now, if the price tag wasn't there, or if they were like, okay, like ChatGPT is now going to be like, you know, $10 a month or whatever, I would be like, honestly, I don't really use it that often. I don't think it's worth $10 a month to me. Like, I don't know that I would get like that value
mm-hmm.
out of it.
Right.
And I would just be like, oh, well, it was fun while it lasted. You know, and like,
right.
Like they don't have me yet.
Yeah.
You know? So like, I think that that's probably like a marker that's worth like keeping an eye on is like, if something that is actively free at the moment became not free, would you, what would be like the point where like they had you or didn't have you in terms mm-hmm. of like to where you'd be like, man, I use this a lot for my job, or like, you know, man, this helps me like solve a bunch of problems, or like, you know, I do like some like brainstorming through it or whatever, you know,
right.
Like Google, I think is probably, you know, another one of these. I mean, Google obviously has ads and everything, but like, I would imagine that in the early days, it could have been the type of thing that could have blocked its success if they tried to monetize it too quickly, you know, or like if you had to go through like a paywall to Google something.
Right.
You know, because I mean, that felt like a superpower for a super long time too.
Well, even now, I mean, obviously Google's super free to use.
That's true too. There's nothing in your way of using it.
Right.
So.
Right. It's like Google's way of advertising is so like you don't even like, you know, you'll just type something in and it's like, you might not even be aware that the top result is like a sponsored result or something.
Right. This is like maybe like my own weird, like I always like, for example, whenever I use like Alexa at my house, I always thank her for everything that she does, which is probably unnecessary, but I do it anyway.
It can't hurt. It doesn't hurt to be polite. You know,
it never hurts to be polite. You never know. Like one polite, day they'll be like, he said, thank you. Every single time.
That guy.
Yeah. It's like, what a lad.
Thanks for the candy.
Yeah, exactly. That's a Dane Cook reference. That's a Dane Cook reference. Way deep cut, but I love it. If you know, you know. But what was I going to say? I do not click on anything sponsored through my Google Outcomes.
Yeah.
Like, I'm always like,
oh my
like,
gosh, I will do the same thing. Like, just as an example, like if I was going to like Pokemon Center or something.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Like if I just go to like, this sounds super wild when I just type in PokemonCenter.com, but like, let's say I go to Google and I type in Pokemon Center to go like check their new stuff. Almost guaranteed the top two results, the top result will be PokemonCenter.com and it'll say sponsored underneath it. Beneath that will be PokemonCenter.com, not sponsored, just the natural search result because that's exactly what you were looking for.
Exactly.
I will never click on the sponsored one.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
I always click on the natural one. And like, I don't know what battle I'm winning by doing that.
I'm right there with you. I'm like,
but I'm like, no, this one.
Yeah, right.
If you advertised it to me, then I don't want to click it.
Right.
Even
though
it's exactly what I wanted.
Right. Yeah, it's the exact same thing. And if anything, I had to do more work to not click it because I had to scroll down
like one line.
Yes. Yep. No, you're 100% correct.
Yeah.
Anyway, be sure to head on over to Carlin Brothers Mercantile. great moment for a plug, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so we've spent an awful lot of time on this. Should we transition and see if we can?
Sure. Let's cut to an ad break.
Popcorn Culture is supported by Shopify. You know, when we first started on our journey of making videos for the internet, the idea of ever reaching a stage where we had like, you know, merch seemed like a pipe dream, like a crazy milestone that was almost too ambitious to even think could be on the horizon. But then when the day came to do it, there presented the huge question of how do we do it? Where do we go? Where do we start? And the answer turned out to be Shopify. Here's the thing. When you're in this world, there's a lot of hats you're always trying to wear. There's the most fundamental aspects of coming up with new ideas and learning your way around cameras, but otherwise you're just kind of thrust into the deep end of operating a business. But that's where Shopify comes in clutch. The user dashboard is so intuitive. It's ridiculously easy to run reports and learn what products are killing it and which ones aren't. It's like having a sales professional on staff to help guide your every decision. And even if you do run into an issue, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. So sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/poppop. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/poppop now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/poppop.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Okay, Jason, before we started the episode, we always do this thing where, like, before I go into the intro, I'll always ask you, I'll be like, all right, is there anything you want to start with? And, you'll usually tell me, and then I'll usually ignore it and do something else entirely.
Or somewhere else.
No, I honestly, I don't mean to ignore it. I feel like there's this, like, weird magic that happens sometimes where once I dive into the intro, it's almost like my brain is, like going into, like, host mode or whatever. Yeah. And I think that it is, like, it is sort of, like, mentally calibrating and being, like, okay, you have more that you think you know offhand to say about this particular topic, and you're weighing it against how Jay will feel about you changing the subject basically on the spot.
So I've noticed, I know you do this, and it is like a funny thing because, like, on the flip side, despite me knowing that, I am in like intentionally vague when I add things to the document.
Oh, really?
Because like I don't want to inform you, like, I don't want you to have formed thoughts about what it's going to be, or I want to either surprise you with the information.
Yes.
So like sometimes I will put stuff in there that sounds very mundane and that I know I have a lot to say about, but then clearly you look at it and you're like, well, that's mundane, so I'm gonna skip it.
Skating right past that.
And then like so I'm aware that happens. But also, as far as I'm concerned, we just finished the intro. So welcome to the episode.
Welcome to the episode where now we will properly get into today's topic, which is going to be Jay and his family had potty training boot camp over the weekend.
Oh boy, we sure did.
Congratulations on hitting this personal milestone, by the way.
Well, I mean, if you listen to the last episode, of course, the last several episodes of the pop, we have been slowly working towards this point for like months now, where it was like, all right, we got to do some decluttering, we got to deconstruct their old beds, we got to construct their new beds, we got to, like, you know, we had to get all the other things in place so that Nick and Nate could begin their potty training journey.
Yes,
and
yes, indeed.
So I don't even think we were planning on necessarily doing it this weekend, because like we had plans on like Friday night, and like if we wanted to do it, I think we would plan to like start like right when I got home on Friday, so that we could do it, like take advantage of like the entire weekend, like Friday, you know, night all the way Saturday, all the way Sunday.
Right.
But as it were, it was a holiday weekend, so we had the Monday as well.
Right.
And even obviously we knew that going into the weekend, but like we did not know that the weather was going to be abysmal all weekend. And so
which completely just like I wouldn't quite say it ruined my weekend, but I had planned like months out a lake weekend for myself for Memorial Day, and I was super excited about it, to get out there and like do lake stuff and drive the boat and do all the rest, and it just absolutely completely poured on us the entire time.
It was, he sent me a video. I was like, oh, that is a real bummer.
Yeah, it was. Anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt, but just that was what I did over Memorial Day, was stayed inside while it rained.
Yeah, well, so since it was like going to be super rainy and we couldn't like go outside and go play and stuff, sort of like on a whim, like Saturday morning, Beth and I are like, should we try it in the potty training? Because we can just do it today and Sunday and Monday. And I was like, well, okay. So,
because it's a bit of like a quarantined process in a way, right?
A little bit, yeah. Because like, you know, once you start, you don't want to be like, okay, well, let's just pause for a few minutes and put your diapers back on while we drive around town for a little bit.
Exactly. You know? Right. Which makes sense. But yeah.
Yeah. Because you don't want to confuse them or anything. But so we had a very similar strategy as we did for Luke. So I went out and I got some like potty training prizes.
Nice.
Basically. So we had the long-term prizes and then we had like short-term rewards.
Okay.
Basically. And so the long-term prizes were these Paw Patrol Aqua Pup toys.
I love it.
Except for Luke, he wanted a big truck.
Amazing.
Yeah,
I love it already.
Yeah. Well, it's a Paw Patrol big truck, but they have, I guess they're driving big rigs now. Oh, I don't know. They got a bazillion different forms of vehicles on this show.
It seems like a good way to monetize.
Yeah, they are super self-aware about it too. There's in the movie, they're like, they're you know, at Adventure City, and Rubble's all like, how did you pay for this? And Ryder literally holds up t-shirts and he's like, officially licensed merchandise. This stuff sells like hotcakes. And it was like, shut up, Ryder.
We don't like you. Yeah.
That's how so dare you.
Yeah.
Anyway. So those were our prizes, and we set those up on top of the fridge. So we had them for Nick and Nate, obviously, because they were doing the potty training. Then we had to have one for Luke as well, because, you know, having Luke on our side during the potty training, valuable ally.
Oh yeah, of course. It is the Hunger Games after all.
The Hunger Games out there. You don't want him to be complaining that it's unfair that he's not getting something the whole time. You want him very helpful and motivated to get them on the potty, which he was. So that was good.
That was good.
We had like.
So he only got the prize if they were successful as well.
If he was helpful and in whatever we asked him to do in helping us train them, whether that meant like running and getting some toilet paper or just cheering for them or sitting with them and reading a book running around pantsless as well or something. So which, right. They all just love doing. And then the short-term prizes were just like we had this bag of mini M&Ms. And our strategy is like we set a timer for every 15 minutes. And after it goes off every 15 minutes, you both have to sit on the potty and just sit there for like 1 minute, see if anything happens.
Right.
Then you go about your day. If you just for trying, you get an M&M. If you actually pee, you got 3 M&Ms. And if you went for the big deuce, you got 10 M&Ms. I know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Self-fulfilling prophecy.
Big. I know. I know. Exactly. Right. So yeah, we got everyone situated. Those were the terms. And then for the most part, Nick and Nate and, to be honest, Luke as well, just ran around completely pantsless the rest of the weekend.
That's amazing. So quite the weekend you had, really.
Weekend. I would say we started off a little bit slow. Probably went for like, 2 hours, I think, maybe before anyone really like broke the floodgate, as it were.
Sure.
And then, like I said, then Nick was the first one. He got some pee in the potty and it was like, oh my gosh. And we made like a huge deal about it. And, we got his M&Ms. And then shortly after, Nate did it as well. And then it seemed like they really cottoned on to the situation and were like, oh man, we just got to go pee, we get M&Ms, this is amazing.
Right.
And like, which is of course, so it almost felt like they were like working the system a little, like they would go do it and be like, M&M. And then, but at the same time, it's like, oh, you think you're working the system? You're learning how to go to the potty.
Right. Joke's on you.
Joke's on you. Now you don't have to wear diapers.
Which is good for me.
Which is good for me and you. Wins all around.
These M&Ms weren't even that expensive.
Right. M&Ms are amazing. So we did that. They got it pretty good. Then we go into the next day, and it seemed like it took a little while. Naturally, we had a few accidents around the house. You'd walk around and be like, someone went on the floor. Great.
Yep. Okay. Yep.
But day two, both of them eventually got to the big deuce, and that was a huge celebration.
Incredible. Fantastic. Yep.
That was great.
Way to go, Nick and Nate. Yeah. If you're listening to this,
to this down the line, you're welcome for sharing your journey on the internet. Hopefully this is your future spouse listening and they're just having a blast. You're right, welcome.
They just think it's amazing.
Yes.
And hilarious.
Yeah.
Which it is. I'm very proud of them.
Yeah, I was very proud of them.
I'm proud of you guys as well. It's a great system that you guys have like kind of sorted out.
Oh yeah,
like
you're welcome to use our system if you want. It's called bribery. I'm not above it for this particular thing. I wouldn't say at this moment they're like completely, fully, 100% done potty training.
Sure.
But they have definitely got the gist of it. Like Nick walked down the stairs this morning and he immediately was like, I go potty. And, he went to do it. They are wearing their like undies now rather than their diapers, at least during the day. And then I think we're doing like pull-ups at night.
Okay.
So yeah, night's going to be the tricky part for sure.
Okay.
Yeah. But, we'll see how that goes. I will say we completely lucked out with Luke in that regard, where he did his 3 days of potty training and he went to bed wearing undies and he never had a single accident in bed.
He just got it.
And was like, well, thank God. That was amazing.
So, that's awesome.
Good for you. But so far we haven't had any accidents either with Nick and Nate in bed while they're still wearing diapers in bed. So anyway.
But they're doing it.
Yeah, but they're doing it. They're doing it. We're making serious progress. And I cannot wait for the day when the diapers are just gone for good. And hopefully that is a day in the very near future.
I know. Yeah. It's going to be such a game changer. This is like we went to Addison's 18-month appointment ourselves just here recently. And we were blown away because the pediatrician was talking to us and he was like, yeah, you guys could probably go start to like look at like not that she's like close to being able to be like potty trained or anything like that. But like he was like, you guys could probably go like look at it and like sometime around like, in the next like 6 months to year or whatever, like kind of give it a go. We were like, oh my gosh. But more than anything else, like it's this really unbelievable, like experience as a parent where you're going through these like phases that whilst you're in them, they feel like they're going on forever.
Yeah.
You know, like it's like you settle into your routine, you start to understand it. Like even giving like Addison a bath in the sink, for example, it was like while we were doing it, we would go and we would do it every single night and it was part of our routine. And like we had it all down, like we like, you know, underneath the sink, we sort of had like a designated spot where like all of her toys went and like the shampoo and the little soft plastic cup and everything. And so it was like, you know, all the stuff was exactly where you like needed it to be and knew where it was. And like, I would, you know, have the towels folded over there and, you know, it all made sense. And like throughout the, you know, like 8 months or whatever that we did that, you know, it was like, this is like a part of my existence now.
Right. This is part of my day.
Right. In the same way, like, you know, I get up in the morning, I go get in my vehicle and I drive to work. Like, it's like, you know, this is just sort of like, it feels like perpetuity and then it's gone. And then like all of a sudden she like moved up to like the bathtub upstairs. And it was just sort of like, Now, like, I mean, I opened up the cabinet where we keep the bathtub and I hadn't opened it for like, you know, 7 months or something like that.
Right.
And it was just like, oh yeah,
I could probably like, just get rid of this tub.
Right. It's like, I don't really need this thing anymore. But like, it is.
Unless
so,
you do.
No, not yet. Okay. Not yet. Yeah, right. No, that would be a really unusual way to go about telling you.
Yeah. Guess what? I didn't get rid of my tub.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Jay, I didn't get rid of the tub.
Like,
gasp. No. But I mean, it's really interesting because I just think like time feels so relative, I think now as adults. Like I remember as a kid going to like enter the school year, and like a school year for where we live is 180 days. But like, I mean, when you went to second grade, it felt like you were in second grade
forever,
a lifetime and a half.
Yeah.
You know, it was like. The number of like pencils that I broke, the number of folders that I wore out, the number of binders that I destroyed, you know, it was like I was in second grade forever and a half,
mm-hmm.
and it was only 180 days. It was like basically half of a year.
Oh, I know. It's like, I think, it's or where we are, it's 4 sets of 9 weeks.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, like that's like each quarter of the year is a 9 week period. And I remember like, you know, at some point realizing like in high school, like 9 weeks just isn't that long. And like if I thought about everything as like just 9 weeks, it was like 9 weeks is basically just 2 months. You know, like a new 9 weeks would start and you'd make it through one and be like, it's already only 8 left. But like it would still feel like forever. But like then I remember working in this was OK. So at the concert venue,
right.
Typical lead time for a show, like from when you announce it to when it arrives at the venue, is like 10 weeks.
Okay.
So, you know.
So you're like still like on like the like bizarre same schedule.
So you're like somewhat still on this bizarre schedule, but like at the same rate, like it felt like you would announce shows and they would show up immediately.
Right.
You know, like you'd be working on them for a while, but like those weeks would just, you know, fly by
right.
in a way that they did not when you were in school, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So it like, yeah, I can't imagine like, you know, starting, you know, school in September and being like, all right, we bought tickets to the show. And when this first 9 weeks is over, that's when the show will be here. You know, like that would have felt like, well, it's basically never going to arrive.
Right. Yeah. Like that's a kind of future.
Infinite away.
Right. Right. Interestingly. So I was just thinking about this while you were talking, but like it's, you know, so we're coming up on the 11 year anniversary of Super Carlin Brothers in June, which means that we've almost been doing Super Carlin Brothers 3 times as long as we went to college.
Wow. That is wild.
Isn't it?
Yes.
Because it's like college is like such an era. It means we have been doing Super Carlin Brothers longer than all our high school and college experiences like combined.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, like, so I was thinking about this the other day, like in like February, which is still a while from now, I will like turn 36.
Right.
At which point things that I did in high school will have been a literal lifetime away.
Yeah.
You know, because like you were 18 then and now 18 more years have passed. So it's like that it like the amount of time you experienced on Earth while you were in high school has now passed again. A literal lifetime has passed since you were there.
So
it's like that is just like so like weird to think about.
It is.
Yeah,
it absolutely is. I mean, interestingly, I even got a notification or I got a message from a friend yesterday who just texted and said that Finding Nemo came out 20 years ago yesterday.
Oh, and I was like, what? 20 years ago.
Like the movie Finding Nemo can almost legally drink alcohol.
Wow. Almost.
Almost. Almost.
Next year.
Next year. It's going to be a big year for it. Yeah, we'll have to throw it a birthday party.
Right? You know?
A Finding Nemo birthday party.
A Finding Nemo birthday party. Nemo can drink.
This seems like a pop holiday that we should have, and everybody should go and have like a Dairy Queen Finding Nemo infused cake, and we all the world over have a 21st birthday for Finding Nemo together.
Man, we'll all watch it, you know, right after GoldenEye.
After GoldenEye. Yeah, because any other way, it will mean that we will have to condemn it to forever hatred.
Boy, let me tell you what, the first annual Strawberry Film Festival's lineup of films is just getting truly robust. You know, we've got Finding Nemo, we've got That Thing You Do, we have GoldenEye. It's going to be such a good time.
We've got something for everybody.
Yeah,
literally. You know? I mean, there's across those three movies, you fit into the Venn diagram somewhere. Yeah,
if you can't enjoy one of those three movies, I'm sorry, there's no pleasing you.
Yeah.
That's it.
You do not enjoy cinema.
You don't enjoy movies is what I'm hearing,
there's
right?
There's one person driving to work right now, they're like, I hate all three of those movies.
And I'm like, well, I'm sorry, please send us an email and tell us what you do like.
I know, yeah, that would be so funny. If you don't like those three movies, notably, like you can say to yourself, I actively dislike all three. Let us know what is your favorite movie in that case, because I want to know what, like, who is this person and what does work?
Who are you?
Because it would be so interesting if they sent something and you were like, wow, I can see if this is your favorite movie, why you don't like the other three.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I like it. That's going to be like our arbitrary blanket of like, it's like the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon or whatever. It's like, it's like these three movies are all popular and different enough that every single person on earth likes at least one of them.
Right.
Of course, there's probably someone out there as well. It's like, I haven't seen all three.
I don't even know. What's that thing you do?
Well, And I would respond, what is it like living under a rock? No, I'm just kidding. Because probably I would be willing to bet there are people listening who are younger than all three of those movies as well.
Don't say that. Well, that means as long as there are people under 20 listening, then yeah.
Right, which is not that absurd.
Yeah, not that absurd. So certainly that must be true.
Yeah.
It is, it is like a bummer to me to think that there's children out there who haven't seen Finding Nemo.
I know. Man, you should go and check it out.
Wow.
Okay, so the last piece of insight on this particular topic that I want to talk about, because we're getting ready to go to the beach in a couple of weeks as like a family, and I feel like in my adult life all of our family beach trips just like zip by.
Oh my gosh.
You get there, it's day one, the next morning is Thursday, and you're like, well, basically the trip's over.
That's it.
When we were kids and we would go to the beach, I would feel like we would play like 150 games of mini golf.
Oh my gosh, right, yes.
And it's like there was so much time spent at the Treasure Island putt-putt course in Holden Beach, North Carolina.
Yeah.
And it's like, but like now, like to even think about going to play putt-putt like one time, it's like, well, when would we have time to go play once?
I know. Yeah. Right. Like that would get in the way of my sitting on the beach time, which is only like, you know, when I think about it, maybe like 5 minutes long between walking down to the beach, putting sunscreen on everybody, setting the chair up, not being bothered by the children for more than like 30 seconds.
And then, hey, it's lunchtime.
Time to pack it all in. After lunchtime, it's quiet time where, of course, you can't leave the house because all the kids are sleeping in there. So maybe I'll just go sit out by the pool for like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And then I'll come back in and it'll be basically dinner time. Then, you know, it's morning. So really, when you think about it, we may as well not even go.
This is like the thing. Like, I feel like, you know, people are like, time is relative, but I feel like whenever they say that, they're like speaking like in terms of like space. But like, I'm literally like, I think that seconds move slower as a child.
Yeah, I mean, you're cramming in way more fun per second as a child than you are as an adult.
Right.
But like, I wonder if that was true. Like, were we as much of a hindrance to our parents?
Yes.
Not that you're a hindrance, children. But like, probably. No, it felt like mom and dad and like, it felt like the group of adults who were present at the beach with us were having nonstop fun as well.
It did seem that way, but it could be, and me and you were talking about this yesterday, just privately as well, which was just the idea that like, we're in a certain season of life right now where the kids are not quite independent enough to wear just the full expectation. Like when they're like, you know, like when like Luke is 10 and the twins are 8 and Addison is 7, I don't even know how this math works relative to each other, 6, you know, it's like
thereabouts.
It seems like they will, there's a good possibility that like they'll all go out and just like play on the beach all day together.
Right.
And like, they'll be excited that they get a week of time with their cousins.
Exactly.
You know, and at which point we can go back to maybe getting like, you know, 37 minutes of time.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No doubt. We'll go out there and be like, all right, kids, who wants to play volleyball? Stand still while I spike it at you.
Dude, somewhere there is home video of like actual volleyball games that we played on the beach with the entire group of people we went to the beach with every year. And I swear to you, like in my mind, we were like great.
Oh yeah. But like they were like cinematic dives, big save. Whoa.
It was like the scene from Top Gun. Basically.
Yeah, basically. Yeah,
like, that's,
yes.
In my head. That's what, cause I feel like we not only played the game, but then like went inside that night, gathered everybody around the TV where we hooked the VHS up to it so we could rewatch the game that we played that day.
Yeah, totally.
Do you remember this?
Well, after we finished watching the All-Star Baseball game, which was on no matter what when we were at the beach.
No matter what.
No matter what.
We
I don't know how
it
was scheduled every year. There was the Home Run Derby, the All-Star Baseball game, the Tour de France. Watched all of them nonstop and managed to never leave the beach.
This
is how it happens.
And play 150 rounds of putt-putt. And
go
play
fish.
Unlimited go fish.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
So much go fish and poker at night with strawberry daiquiris. Oh, virgin strawberry daiquiris.
Yes. So good. So good.
Man.
I can taste the tartness from here.
Right. Then also there was, you know, Closet Buddies. There was, you know, the wrestling.
We had our candy boxes.
We had candy boxes. You had to get down to the market to do some trading, by which I mean, I think normally the room you and I stayed in, those are the trading centers, and everyone set up a little shop on the bed, and we'd be wheeling and dealing Airheads and Blow Pops and Starburst and stuff.
The Airheads were always like the primary currency.
Absolutely.
You know? And if you had like a white one, it was like...
Yeah. I remember one year my whole goal of the trading was to try and be the only one who had all of the blue Airheads in the house, and one of the other family members, not family members, the other family who was there, their daughter Madeline, had the lone blue Airhead left that I did not own.
And she wouldn't trade it to you?
She would not trade it to me. And so I adopted this new strategy, which was like, just eat it. You know, like, why don't you just consume it? Because then I will continue to achieve my goal to also not eat it. So
wow, she was on to you.
She was really,
you had truly met your match.
I know. I was like, come on, what's going on?
He's like, I'm trying to do a thing here.
I'm trying to monopolize the blue Airheads.
You're missing the bit.
You're ruining my market control.
Anyway, guys, as ever, thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of The Pop. I feel like we really managed to hit one topic aggressively hard and then two other small ones for not nearly as long. But we appreciate you joining us on this week's journey. I think it was a lot of fun. There is the Miles Managed Step competition, which is currently happening.
Yeah, it is.
If you would be interested in joining Jay and myself in a 120-mile journey.
Death match. No, sorry, not a deathmatch. Sorry, for different podcast.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we're hosting a deathmatch somewhere else. Apparently,
if you can find it, you're in.
Right. Yeah, this is
the
Jay
first rule of deathmatch is, dang it, I already broke it.
This is Jay telling you we have another podcast somewhere. This is neutral.
Can you imagine?
Chaos. Yeah, people are like, I'm going to find that other podcast.
Can you imagine if we had a complete other podcast we had marketed nowhere ever, but that we updated every single week?
Okay, if we flip these letters from the pop pop sign, would it be Bob Bob?
It would be dot 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 dot
dot
right?
Dot, yeah.
Dot dot.
Yeah, well, that's our other podcast. Dot dot
dot dot.
Anyway, we have a step competition going on through our partnership with Pacer, which is an app basically that will track your daily steps. Those steps get translated into distance traveled. That distance traveled translates into the app and moves your beacon up the coast of the United Kingdom as you work your way from the iconic King's Cross station in London all the way to a magical remote castle in Scotland. You can actually join at any time. The official event starts on June 1st, but at minimum, it will take you 20 days to complete the journey, and maybe on average about 40 days if you're doing about 3 miles of moving per day. So all the information on how to join is in today's show notes or the description down below. We would absolutely love to have you come out and join us on the journey. It's going to be so much fun. But otherwise, until next time.
Pop, pop.
It would have been been so funny if you said dot dot.
Yeah, I thought about it as I was saying it. I was like, that was a missed opportunity.
Oh well, that's all right. We're all out. Right,
bye.
Bye.